Let the show begin. You guys have fun out there today.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content is simply the opinions of the hosts and our guests. So without delay, let me introduce our hosts, George, Tom, and Kelly.
Welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 85. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Hissen, and tonight with me, I have Thomas.
Hello.
And Kelly.
Hello.
So, Kelly, what did you do this week in Guns?
This week, I went to SFRC on Saturday, of course, because I do that every Saturday. Remember last week I told you that I returned the bolt carrier group?
Yeah.
Well, I put the money towards a stock that Kevin was buying. So he bought an NEA CCS stock, you know, one of those, it's one of those collapsible stocks. It comes with its own bolt carrier group. So he put his new stock on, so we came home from SFRC. He put his new stock on his AR-15, and so he gave me his old stock, which was the Magpul. And then he gave me the bolt carrier group out of his AR-15 and put the new one in as well. So I have a new stock, and I have, well, it's kind of new to me, and a new bolt carrier group as well, but I had to clean it before I installed it. So,
so what do you have left before you finish the air build?
I have everything.
Oh, it's done.
It's done. Pretty much done. I didn't shoot it this weekend. I went to the range this afternoon with Kevin. It's Mother's Day. Hey, let's go to the range. So went to the range. I shot his. It's a nice little AR-15. It is 7.5-inch barrel, and then it has the collapsible stock on it. And yeah, it was. It's pretty cool. And
yeah, he put a nice picture on Facebook.
Yeah. And I was just, yeah, we had to move ranges because we were at a 25-yard range, and in order to use the AR-15, we had to go over to 50-yard. So, yeah, we put some stuff up on the berm, and yeah, I tried it, and Kevin tried it, and I'm going, it's not sighted in, and it wasn't sighted in. He took it, and he goes, yeah, it's shooting about 6 inches high, or low. So I went, okay. And we didn't adjust the sights on it or anything like that, so I just took it and I was aiming, you know, Kentucky windage, so I was aiming six inches higher than the targets, and yep, blowing them out of the water. So it was really cool. I love it.
Excellent.
Love it.
What kind of sights on it?
He has it's a green dot, and it's I don't know what brand it is. He said that it's, anyways, I don't know what brand it is. So, yeah, he wants to get a new optic for it, and I have to get one for mine. Right now I just have the iron sights on it from, well, it's not really an iron sights, it's the Magpul sights. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's about it. What else did I do? Well, I shot my Glock 17. Yeah, that was okay. I shot his MMP-22. I love that little gun. And the other thing that we did was we shot the new Squirrels Challenge and we killed the squirrel.
I saw.
Yeah. So I didn't.
Yeah, it had a real nice tight grouping on that nut, though.
Yeah. So I submitted my challenge, and yeah, it was a nice little grouping. It was really windy today.
It was.
Like, it was extremely windy. Normally, because of the side berms and the berms, it's not that windy at Frontenac, but it was really windy. And it wasn't even just, you know, the wind on the bullets. It was actually the wind on us and the rifles, too. Did you see I had one flyer there? Thomas?
That's where you nicked the side of the helmet?
I nicked the guy's chin straps that were hanging. So that was the one, and I'm going, damn wind! But anyways, it was pretty good. I thought it was pretty good. Got them
it was
all
a great grouping.
Got them all in the 10, so yeah, I love my new 10/22. It's an awesome gun. So, yeah, that's everything that I did. What about you, Thomas?
I went to Farms Outlet on Friday, I think, and I picked up some of the Lyman media. I was saying last week I was using the crushed walnut stock or shell stuff, and I noticed that it cleans the shells, but it doesn't give that really nice shine. You see a lot of micro scratches on it, so I decided to switch back to Lyman. Mm. And of course, the brass came out nice and shiny.
Well, just hold on before you go on. The walnut shell is a lot harder and denser than the than the corn cob, right?
Yeah, and it's very tiny and it's very sharp. So right. It does a great job cleaning it, but it also does a lot of minute scratches. And I was worried about the scratches causing it hanging up in the chamber or something. So
I think that
it doesn't look as pretty.
Well, no, but you also have to actually tumble it quite a bit in order for it to get, you know, the worn in those little bump the edges to be worn. Do you know what I mean? And then also putting the compound in as well. I found that even with the corn cob media, you actually have to put the brass polisher in a couple of times. You have to, more that you run it, the better or the cleaner and the nicer that it gets.
Yeah, I noticed with the corn cob in the past that after a while it loses some of the, because it does have a polishing compound in it, but after a while it wears off, so you have to replenish that. But the it came out really, really, really nice. What else did I do? I reloaded some 9s and some 45s, and I upped the powder charge in the 9mm.
Oh, did you?
So it likes the higher velocity. It grouped really, really well today.
What are you shooting?
I was shooting the Grand Power, Geek Scout.
Okay, sorry.
Also, what I did is I was speaking to Matthew from Geek Sketch and Guns, and he says when he's got a rock tumbler. He doesn't have a vibrating tumbler. So a lot of times when he deprimes his brass, he throws it in the rock tumbler, and he puts just a touch of dish soap in it, which would work in a rotary tumbler because you're not vibrating it. Mm-hmm. So I thought about doing that in my Lyman vibrating tumbler, and I put some warm water in it, and I could see all the water coming up and thinking, oh, that thing's going to suds up like crazy. So, and I didn't have any defoaming agent. So
what did you use for soap?
I used a Tide Pod because it's got a defoaming agent in it.
Oh, okay.
It worked great. I only put it so it actually just filled the top of the brass, and after about 30 minutes, that water was black. I mean, black, black, black. And after about an hour, the cases are just about shiny inside. The only problem is it's really, really soapy, so you really have to clean it off afterwards. Yeah. But it really did a good job of cleaning up the primer pockets. And if I discovered that if you, because I have my little Leap pocket tool. Well, if you do it when it's wet, like if there's any residue, you do one little turn and it all comes off. Once the big powder is wet, because it looked pretty clean, but you see a little bit of residue around the outside. One little spin, and when it's wet, it comes right off. So I think that's what I'm going to do from now on. Once my brass is really, really dirty, I'm going to throw it in the tumbler, and I'm going to put some soap in it. The thing you have to remember, though, is that because especially with the Lyman tumbler, you've got that long metal screw, and then you got it held on by a metal washer. Well, I went out and I took the O-ring gasket off one of my air pistols and I put it underneath the gasket for the washer so that way no water would actually get into, because if the water is bubbling up, it can get up underneath and it can get inside the machine. So you got to make a point of making it watertight so now the water actually gets into your tumbler. So that's what I did. And when I was finished, I dried it all off and I put a little DW-40 on it just to displace any water so I wouldn't get any rust growing up on the long screw, and it seemed to work, so I think I'm gonna do that from now on. What else did I do? Oh, I went to the club. We have an awards banquet every year. My club is really, really active in leagues. We've got PPC, we've got Bullseye, and in Bullseye we have NRA, ISSF, we have ORSA, we have Service Rifle. So what my club does every year is that a couple of the members are ex-armed forces. So we get to use the officer's mess at the armory in Oshawa, which is really nice. It's very, you know, very, very pomp and circumstances. You've got all the swords up all around the room, and you've got all the silver tankards up, and it's, you know, completely military protocol. Before you start, you've got to say the Lord's Prayer, and then the toast for the Queen, and then the service. All the women get served first, the men get served last. So it's, you know, it's kind of nice. It's nice being in that type of environment. And I didn't shoot last year, basically because I was having problems with my vision, and I had to get my glasses and contacts straightened up. So I didn't participate in any of the awards. I didn't get any. But the women kicked ass this year. I would say three quarters of the awards went to the women. They won bulls. Well, they did one in. They won in bullseye. They won in a lot of the rifles and the shotgun divisions. I'd say at least over three quarters of the trophies were taken by the girls this year, which was excellent to see. And the very last award, it was sort of like a joke award, and the president came up and he sort of put one of the ladies on the spot for her joke award, not realizing that she actually had her own joke planned on him. I guess what had happened last year when they were shooting, when she was shooting, she had a ricochet came back and hit this guy. Was the RO, and ricochet came back and hit him in the leg and broke the skin, and he was bleeding. So when she finished her match, unload, show, clear, holster, she looked over and saw that the blood running down his legs. And first of all, she gave him heck for wearing shorts. Well, you should be wearing shorts in the first place. You should be having your pants on. Well, what she'd done, she'd went out and she had a T-shirt made. So she had the last laugh because he put her on the spot in front of everybody. He'd take the mic and she said, oh, no, I'm not finished yet. And she told the whole story about the ricochet and everything else. And then she pulled out this T-shirt. And she had this T-shirt made saying, I got shot, and the only thing I got was this crummy T-shirt. And on the back of the T-shirt, they now have a nickname for him as Ricochet Billy. So it was hilarious seeing this girl put this guy on the spot and hand him this T-shirt. So turnabout is fair play, and it was really funny to see it. I also shot the Orson match today. I didn't have a chance to test fire those new nines that I made because I was just saying last week it wasn't locking back on the last round on a couple of mags. Uh-huh. So I put it up one notch. And I had no problem, but my shots were about five or six inches higher. So a couple of real small targets I missed because my shots were still high. So after we finished shooting the match, I went inside the range and I decided to dance. So I'll be all set. And I'm telling you, I've done matches where we've had torrential rain, we've had snow, matches never yet called. We all did two runs, and Ken and I are getting set up for our third run. Just a little sprinkle of rain, and they call the match. No, it's getting wet. We all have to pack up. I'm like, what? So. At my club, if you get rain, they cancel the matches, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, oh, come on. It's just a couple of drops. It's my turn. I want to go. I want to shoot. Because, no, I'm the arrow. I'm calling it. Rain. So. But apparently, they got hail and snow down in Bowmanville. But we didn't. We just got a little bit of rain. And I think it rained for like 10 minutes, and then it stopped. But we packed up, cleared up, and went home. So. What about you, Mike? What did you do with guns this week?
Oh, I reloaded another 200 rounds of 9mm this week, just getting ready for the match. I tried to go practice on Friday, and I roll up, and I realized they were setting up for the match.
Oh, so, yeah. You got to remember that part.
Yeah.
So, they got to get ready for you.
Yeah, so I didn't end up getting to shoot, but I did get to help patch and watch them all shoot the match, watch all the ROs shoot it, mm-hmm. which is... if you've never shot an IDPA match, or I assume it's the same for IPSC, it's a great chance to go watch really good people shoot without the pressure of you having to go shoot right after them.
And you know what? You can learn some tricks of how to do it, right?
You can watch them, how they plan out the stages and things like that. Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yep. And then, I went back again on Saturday to shoot a match. I won my division, and I came third overall.
Excellent. Congratulations. Good for you.
Thanks, yeah. So I shot that match, and then right after the match was my first chance to try and bench my P226. So I did that, and I benched it at 10, 15, 20, and 25 yards. I was really happy with the group at 10 yards. There was one ragged hole, and then 15 yards wasn't bad, and 20 and 25 is where it really opened up.
So hang on. How long have you had this gun?
Just over a year now.
So you're shooting at matches, but you've never actually benched it first?
Yep. I know that when I pointed at my target and I pull the trigger, it hits. Mm-hmm. That's all I needed to know.
the first thing I do when I get a new gun is I go straight to the range and I bench it just to see where it's hitting.
Yeah.
Benching. So, yeah, I'll bench, like, a gun or whatever, but I also like to try and zero it in based on how I shoot, too. Because if you're benching, I know that I hold things, you know what I mean?
Well, I think the advantage of benching is just to see where the sights are when you get the gun.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and you can zero it in almost to the point where, but I like to, anyways, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. If you pull a little to the right,
and it
ends up hitting perfectly right in the middle every time, even though the sights might be a little off, it kind of counteracts with the way you pull the trigger. I'm sure that's not the right thing to do. I'm sure that the professionals and people like Trevor would probably get mad at me for doing that, but it works, so.
It works.
Yep.
I know. Yeah, anyways. Go ahead, sorry.
Yep.
Sorry we interrupted.
That's all right. So after that, I shot the Sierra 64 target from 7 yards.
Okay, you did pistol? Sorry.
Yep, pistol. Yep, it only took me about 4 tries before I was happy with my target.
That was a good target. I saw it. You sent it to me.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, I haven't posted it yet on Facebook.
Send it to me.
Yeah.
Post it on Facebook, too. Post it on our page, too, and then everybody can see what we're talking about.
Sure, I will.
Yeah, I don't think I posted my targets on our page. I think I just sent them to them.
Yeah.
So. You get your sticker yet, Kelly?
Nope.
No, me neither. Sorry, Mike, we interrupted you again.
That's all right. So then today I just cleaned my P226. I just want to make sure it's nice and clean before the match.
Yep.
For this week's match, and then made some homemade case lube because I ran out.
Okay. And how do you make that?
I went to the dollar store and I got a little spray bottle and I bought some lanolin oil, 100% lanolin oil, and I mixed that with 99% alcohol rubbing oil. I think it's rubbing alcohol, and you mix it 12 to 1. So I mix that up in a little spray bottle, and then I can shake it up and spray all my cases with it.
Okay.
Yep. Do you spray your pistol cases too, or just for the rifle cases?
Both. I use it on both pistol and rifle. I know you don't really need to on pistol, but I just find it makes things a little smoother.
Well, it depends on the dies. If you're using carbide dies, no, you don't have to. If you're using standard steel dies, yeah, you have to lube them or you're just going to get stuck.
Yeah, I got carbide, but I'd rather be double sure that it's going to come out every time than get one jammed in there.
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I just spent the rest of today sorting through my brass, which I'm not even close to being done.
How much do you have?
I probably have about 4,500 to 5,000 pieces of brass left.
Serious? Oh, wow.
Yeah. He picks up all the range brass, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I pick up everything, and I save it all normally for the winter to clean and sort and everything, but this winter got hectic, so it got pushed to spring.
Mm. Yeah. How do you sort it?
Right now, I'm just sorting it by head stamp.
Okay. So you don't have a sorter already where you'll sort according to size and then going through it, or do you?
What do you mean by sorting by size?
Well, I think he was just picking up 9mm.
Oh, you're just picking up 9, not anything else?
Oh, I've already sorted all the 9 out of everything else.
Okay.
Now I'm just going through all the 9 again.
Okay.
And I'm going sorting out the brand.
Brand head stamps. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
All right.
Yeah. So that's the fun of doing that. All right, so guns in the news. Thomas, you want to take the first story?
Sure. This one comes from CBC News. Police in Whitehorse are looking for 4 shotguns stolen from a Yukon government office earlier this month. RCMP are not exactly sure when the theft happened, but they say cash was reported stolen from the Quartz Road office on April 12th, and then the theft may occur several days earlier. Police say more than a week had passed before they actually noticed that the guns were gone. I guess they reported the cash stolen and then they realized, oh, we're missing guns too. Police say all 4 firearms are Remington 870 shotguns. So I wonder if they have the same safe storage regulations that we do.
So it was stolen right from their office?
Yeah, it was apparently an RCMP office.
Hmm.
But it wasn't noticed until later. Oh, well. It happens.
All right. Story number 2. Police summoned to squirt gun battle in Oakville. An unusually intense fight with squirt guns brought police to Oakville neighborhood, where they had some stern words with a group of teenage girls. The teens were playing what's often called the assassin's game. It's fought with squirt guns, often in large public areas and over an extended time. But But area residents who didn't know that were alarmed to see people in black hoods and ski masks brandishing what looked like weapons. We saw a car drive down the road with someone's head sticking out of the sunroof, said Tara. I'm not even going to try that. Which, quick note here, just because someone's sticking their head out of a sunroof, that doesn't necessarily mean they have a weapon. That quote doesn't really say anything.
Yeah. Anyways.
Anyways, they were wearing ski masks, yelling and screaming. Resident Chris Chadwick said, the teens looked like terrorists. It's just the wrong thing to do with the way the world is, he told CBC News. It looks scary, and mothers and fathers are going to react. Police were called, and they shut down the street. Halton Regional Police say the kids were playing a dangerous game, noting that when they get a gun call, they treat it as a real gun. Police say they will continue to react until the message gets through.
Well, they have to. You know, they have to take. They get a gun call. They have to take it seriously. You know, that's their job.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they shouldn't be driving around and sticking out the, you know, the roof and.
Well, especially with ski masks in the summertime.
Guns and, yeah. Yeah. Anyways, but I'm glad it was an actual call. It was them in. Yeah. Anyways.
Do you remember that Slamfire episode they had Chris Babes on? And he was him and his kids were outside playing with, I think, squirt guns. And a neighbor called the police, and the police did a takedown at his house because he was playing outside with his kids.
Well.
Yeah, well, so. People are a little bit more vigilant, and they're a little bit, well, they're a little bit more sensitive, not vigilant. Well, yeah, they're vigilant as well. A little bit more sensitive and that, and some of these stories are going around, and obviously... They're going to call the cops, and so it's better to be. It's better to, as the cops said, you know, it's better to, you know, treat it as if it's actually real as opposed to not, right?
Yeah, in this day and age, you have to.
Right.
But you know, if you see somebody running around the front lawn with their kids, you know, obviously playing with each other, it's one thing. But you know, if you're driving down the street and you've got ski mask on, and you're going to create fear into some people, and they're going to react. And
was there a difference in these? These guns were—they like a Nerf Super Soaker. We all know what a Nerf Super Soaker looks like, as opposed to something that looks like. Anyways, I'm not going to go into there.
We used to have these. They were Uzi electric water guns, and they looked just like an Uzi. And they were magazine-fed water guns. And yeah, they—you know—if somebody pointed that at you, you would know it wasn't a real gun. So I can understand people getting scared and making the call.
Okay.
All right.
Anyways. The petition for E111 is now closed. It closed with a total of 25,252 signatures.
Excellent.
That's very linear for my OCD numbers.
Yeah.
25,252. That's very good.
So do we know what happens next with this?
It's getting presented... It's getting presented, who was the MP? He was from BC.
Oh, is it Zimmerman?
Yes.
Zimmer.
Yes, he will be presenting it, so. As a private member's bill.
Has anybody heard anything what's happened with that Senator Crazy Pants' bill? Has nobody picked that up?
Sorry, what was her name?
I have no idea.
I haven't heard anything
her
yet.
Payette, and it had 15 days, and if nobody picked it up, she retired 2 weeks ago Friday, and nobody picked it up. So as of Friday, it was dead in the water.
Officially dead. Okay, that's good. I hadn't heard anything, so I don't think anybody would be stupid enough to pick it up because it was so off the wall.
Yep. So no, it's done.
Good. Less stress.
Okay. NSC has decided to temporarily change our What's New in the Industry segment over the next few months to a What's New Sponsor segment instead, as a way of thanking our sponsors for helping us achieve our goal of making this the most successful charity shoot ever. So this week we're talking about the CCFR, the CSSA, and the CFI. I think they're all really great groups.
Well, let's
how many acronyms can we throw in there?
Well, let's do them one at a time. First of all, CCFR. When I contacted Tracy Wilson, she got back to me almost instantly. She got really gung-ho about it. She goes, yeah, we want to come. And then they actually were having their AGM in Ottawa that weekend. So she actually got the whole board of directors coming out to the charity shoot. Mm-hmm. We've got a very nice donation from the CCFR. And
just hold on, Thomas. Can you actually say who the CCFR is as opposed to just CCFR?
The Canadian Coalition of Firearms Rights.
There you go. In case people don't know, hey, it's an acronym, right?
This is true. And so Tracy's going to take it one step further. She also she works for Skate Canada, I believe, and they have a T-shirt cannon. So she's going to be coming out, and she's going to be shooting CCFR T-shirts at people. So a big shout-out to Tracy Wilson for getting everybody on board. We really do appreciate that. I guess I should talk to them. So I did all the contacts with these, I guess. The CSSA, I spoke to Mike Dunhoven, and if you don't know, CSSA is Canadian Shooting Sports Association, and Mike Dunhoven is a very active member, and he got back to me right away, and again, the CCSA gave us a very nice financial donation as well. Tony Bernardo is busy that weekend, but hopefully we'll have John Evers out, and we had John on the show a few weeks ago, so we're looking forward to having them. And the last advisory group to come out and support us is the CFI, the Canadian Firearms Institute, and they're one group that we'd even have to ask. They actually approached us to get involved, and they are making a personal donation. At the same time, they're also doing a challenge between their clubs. So, and I believe Piper's also coming to the charity shoot as well, so that'll be great. And I got my T-shirt in the mail. They have if you're a CFI member and you take two new people shooting, you get a free T-shirt. So I messaged her on Monday. I had my T-shirt by Friday. So thank you, Piper. I appreciate that.
Oh, that was really quick.
Yeah, cool.
Wow. So, yeah, we wanted to say thank you to all of them because of the fact that because of them, we were able to put on the show. Not the show. You know, the charity shoot.
They all approach things differently. Mm-hmm. And they're all needed. So, mm-hmm. You know, if you don't belong to – we always say belong to at least one, if not two, even three of the organization. Like Kelly, I think belongs to all of them.
I don't belong to all of them, but I will. The Canadian Shooting Sports Association, that's one of the things that wasn't, I got my membership. Still haven't got my Canadian Coalition for Firearms Rights membership in the mail yet, but I'm waiting for it.
So, that was another thing. I was telling Mike that I was going to be speaking to Jim Drysdale, who is the chief RO instructor for the RO courses, because he's actually a member of my club. And because I was trying to see if there was an RO course for Mike out near the Ottawa area. And apparently right now there's a new person in charge, and they're restructuring the whole program of all the different courses and stuff. So once I get some more information, and actually Jim gets some more information because he has to go in and have a meeting with the guy, they're reorganizing everything. So once I get some more information from Jim, I'll let you know when the courses are coming up, because Jim didn't even know right now. He just said he got an email and things are being restructured and he's not up to point what's happening yet. So they are going to be offering some more courses. So keep your eye on the CSSA website for that.
We can probably promote it on our podcast as well.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Excellent. Okay.
And tonight joining us, we have Jackie Butner, a former Canadian Forces medic, here to talk to us about trauma care. Jackie, why don't we start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a retired corporal med tech. I spent 14 years in the Army, 7 in the field, and 7 on an Air Force base. Haven't done a whole lot of trauma training since I got out, but I keep my first aid and my CPR up to date, and I've got medical rehabilitation training as well. So,
okay. So no medical training beyond the first aid since you've gotten out.
No.
Okay. So why don't we get right into this trauma kits? What do you think people need to have kits for?
it's funny. The absolute minimum you really need is a whole whack of triangular bandages and some a lot of gauze. You can pretty much do anything with that.
Okay.
However, Dream Team, then you start looking at a little more stuff.
Okay. Like what?
Well, you start looking at things like personal safety.
Okay.
So having a reflective vest, flares, gloves to make sure you have those, CPR barriers, bags, because you're going to want to get rid of anything that's got the body fluids on it.
Okay.
You know, blood, throw up, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
For first aid, you're probably going to want either universal scissors or a good sharp pocket knife.
Okay.
Roller gauze. Mm-hmm. A couple of different sizes, you know, three or four of each. Pressure dressing. If you can find a good field dressing, a nice thick one, those are great. If you can't, you can build them easily enough with roller gauze and the thick and a thick amount of just sterile gauze.
Okay.
Or non-stick dressings.
Okay.
You're probably going to want some survival blankets, like those metallic ones.
The Mylar ones?
Yeah, the Mylar ones. They you know, they cost all of about $5 a piece, and they're great to have on board if you've got somebody with shock.
Okay, I was going to ask what they're usually used for. Is they're used for treating shock, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and not so.
And
okay.
they're also not too bad for keeping water off of people if it's raining.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. Or to warm people up as well.
Yep. So, non-stick dressings. Any dressings you get, you probably may as well just get large, because if it's a small thing, you can fold it over.
Okay. Good tip.
So, if you have the large ones, then you don't have to worry about how big you need them to be.
Okay. Can I ask a question about... Because you're starting to build all of these things to put into the trauma kits. What do you see people needing them for? Is it like we're talking about from the point of view of if we go to the range and maybe somebody, God forbid, shoots himself, right?
Yeah.
Do you... It might happen. It might happen in our lifetime, right? But do you see it more... Is it something that we should be keeping in our range kit or something in our car?
That would be more for your car. For a range, I would say you probably need some dressings, some triangulars, and make sure you've got a good cell phone.
It's with reception.
Probably your best bet. Yeah. So if there's no reception, hopefully you've got a satellite phone.
Okay.
So what's the recommended procedure or process when you come to an accident or a trauma injury, something like that?
Well, first thing you're going to want to do is figure out what happened quickly. So, you know, there's a car off to the side. Is there only one car? Is there two cars? Then you start thinking about things like, is there any danger? Do I have wires flying around? Is there fire? Is there fuel? Anything that might cause damage to you or to anybody that's injured.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Height is another thing, or odd angles. So if you get somebody that's kind of teetering over the edge of an embankment, you know, things like that really make a difference as to what you're going to be able to do and what you have to do now and what you can wait to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What about if... So that's a car accident. What about if you come onto a scene and somebody's laying there? It could be no car accident. They've just...
Mm-hmm.
Basically, so you're still doing your assessment, correct?
Yep. You still do the same assessment. You look around. Again, is there anything electric going to be a problem? Is there any water problem? Any fire problems? Is there any threat from an animal or another human being?
Mm-hmm. That's
okay.
That's one that's been talked about lately, especially if there's somebody that's actively engaging people. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
Right. So.
And also, you could have somebody that's a relative or a close friend that, you know, if they don't know what's going on,
and
you start helping, sometimes they can get a little upset, too. So you're going to have to make sure you're aware of how they're doing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so, go ahead.
Yeah, so that with that, while you're doing that, you're probably going to be calling 911 if you can, or finding somebody else that can.
Okay.
If you have any option of doing that.
Okay. So you've gotten to your scene. You pretty much make sure that yourself and whoever you're about to take care of is also safe, that there's no other external hazard to them.
Yep.
What do you start looking at when I don't want to call them a victim, but the person that's laying on the ground hurt?
One of the easiest things to do is if they're lying on the ground, come up by their feet, tap their feet, see if they're awake.
Okay.
You know, call them. You don't have to know their name. Only say, "Hey, buddy, you okay down there?" If they don't answer, tap their feet. Okay. Don't go near their arms, because if they wake up and they're just asleep, sometimes people get hurt that way. If they don't respond, then go down and check. See what you're coming up across. You know, is the person breathing? Yes? Good. No? Okay. Then you're going to be starting CPR, because that's the new protocols.
Okay.
If somebody's not breathing, you automatically go to CPR. So.
Right. Okay. So there's the saying, if they're screaming and crying and complaining, that's a good thing, right?
That's always a good thing. That means that A, they're conscious, B, they're reacting to pain, C, they've got an airway,
mm-hmm.
D, it's a pretty darn good one if they're screaming.
I just shot myself in the foot.
Yep.
Sorry, I've seen a lot of videos.
Yeah. Yeah, no, a screaming patient is not necessarily the one you're going to have to go to first. If you've got more than one, then you have to start looking for the ones that aren't screaming then. But if
right.
it's just one, it's a really good sign. And you could all you do then is you just talk them.
Yeah. Okay. So, sorry, I kind of like almost took over this. Sorry, but
that's quite all right.
So, one of the things that you were talking about is if it's a range accident, so you need triangular bandages or bandages, pressure bandages as well. One of the things that a lot of people have been on the fence about is tourniquets. Do you have a view on them?
For the most part, for a closed injury, you probably won't need them.
Okay.
A fair amount of pressure and a dressing that's going to absorb the blood is all you really need at that point.
Okay. So
if you have an amputation, then it gets iffy.
Okay.
Okay.
So what's the best course of action with that then?
If the person's still up and moving around, get them to sit down.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they are. You never know. Depends on where you get hit. Then just, put the dressing on, get them, and get a hold of emergency services. Don't drive them to the hospital yourself if you've got any choice in the matter. Because
mm-hmm.
if something has been hit, like if an artery has been nicked or something, you've got no way to deal with that in your own vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So, call emergency services, and they'll get somebody out there that will have the equipment and the ability to talk to the doctors that you can't. So.
Okay.
So you mentioned triangular bandages.
Yeah.
What are those used for?
Everything.
Okay.
The nice thing about a triangular bandage is you can make it into any size bandage that you need to hold on any kind of dressing. You can have somebody put a sling on. You can use them for splints, to tie splints together. You can use them in like if you use three or four or five of them to wrap to secure an embedded object. Yeah, they're handy. Okay. You know, as long as they're clean, they're perfectly serviceable. And you know, I mean, you can actually make your own out of bed sheets.
Okay.
So you don't even have to spend a lot of money. If you've got old bed sheets, those are great too.
Okay. And gauze, question, what makes gauze so special? Like compared to me just pulling my shirt off my back and using that to put pressure on something.
The nice thing about gauze is that it's, unless the package is open, it's considered sterile.
Okay.
So you're not going to be introducing bacteria and anything else into a wound that you might from a shirt. I mean, if all you got is a shirt, use it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, emergency situations, you use a lot of things. I mean, one of the best things out there is if you've got somebody around, a woman around that has pads.
Okay.
Hopefully not ones that have any scent on them or anything, but just a regular old pad. Those things are great.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I'm just trying to think of reasons why, like, because you always hear some people who say, like, oh, I don't need to carry around a medical kit because I can use my belt as a tourniquet and I can use my shirt as a gauze or a sling or, you know what
it
I mean?
Can.
They want to use what they have on them, but as opposed to go out and buy.
That's great. Are you going to walk around with your pants around your ankles and bare chest in the middle of winter?
Yeah, that'd be a little cold.
Yeah. If you have the proper stuff with you, you can use it. If you don't happen to have it on you, then you'd use what you have to, but, I mean, why wouldn't you want to be somewhat prepared at least?
Yeah, okay. Better to have the proper equipment instead of trying to make it up as you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So what about all of these fancy things like gauzes with blood clotting components that are impregnated into it?
No, those are great for people who have lots of training, mm-hmm. know what they're doing, and have access to immediate medical services.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, the blood clotting is a great thing, but it's not necessary.
Okay.
And they cost a mint.
Okay.
Whereas you can get regular dressings for a whole lot cheaper. They do the same job, and the person's going to be put on things like anticoagulants or coagulants or antibiotics once they hit medical services anyway.
Right, they're going to actually, you're right, they are going to be given antibiotic injections as soon as they get there.
Exactly.
And that as well. But the big thing is, to stop, you really should stop a blood flow. People can bleed out quite quickly. CPR, get the CPR up and running as well, but stop the blood flow if they're, because you talked about it a little bit, if you hit an artery or if you nick an artery, right? So, yeah, you need to stop that, but, right?
Yeah, but stopping bleeding, all that really needs is pressure.
Okay,
for the
pressure.
Most part.
Right.
Okay.
Even if it's just somebody's hand.
Hands.
Or a dressing that gets tightened down. Triangulars are great for that because you just tighten them down. And they can put the pressure over a broader, a moderate area.
Right. So there's those Israeli bandages as well that you can, it has the gauze on it and then you can wrap it around and tighten it too.
Yep. Yeah, and the Canadian ones are out there, too. I think a lot of people, if you go into, like, an Army surplus place, I think some of them still carry those.
Oh, do
and
they?
They're basically combat dressing.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they're great. If you can get them, go for it.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Just a quick question. You're talking about quick clots and anticoagulants. What is that? Like, what does that mean for someone who has
quick clotting? That's to help stop the bleeding as quickly as possible.
Okay.
It's a chemical that they add to the dressing that will actually help speed up the clotting of the blood factors in the blood, which makes it so that all the vessels get the, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess stopped up with blood factors, and then it stops. It slows down the bleeding. It doesn't necessarily, won't necessarily stop it, but it'll slow it down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Especially in the smaller vessels. So.
Okay. And you're mentioning the Army surplus stores for some of those supplies. Where else could regular civilians get some of these good medical supplies?
The really good ones are harder to find, but if you look in places like medical supply stores, Shoppers Drug Mart has their regular drugstore, but they also have medical supply stores.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they carry a lot of different stuff that you can get your hands on there that's a little more specialized.
Okay.
There's some places online too that I know that some people have gotten theirs from as well. And you're right when you talk about it. You said that the price on some of this stuff was a little bit more expensive, as they say.
Yeah.
Right? A little bit more. Yeah. One of the challenges I gave to one of our friends that listens to the show, he's also a medic. He's a medic from the States, was he was going to go into the dollar store and see what he could pick up. Now, is there some of the things that you've seen at the dollar store that maybe you can put into a trauma kit?
Oh. Yeah, they usually carry things like fairly cheap tablecloths that can be cut down into bandages. There's all sorts of different cotton things in there you can grab and use as dressings.
I think they even carry, like the tensor bandages and that as well.
Yep.
When you say
those work, right?
Yeah, putting pressure on something,
yep.
Right? Those ones will help with that as well. I've just pulled one up, actually. It's called First Aid Canada. It's a new one. I haven't seen this one before. And they have a trauma kit, crisis kit. It's $399.95. So that's a little expensive, especially if you want to have one maybe for a car, one for your range bag and that as well. But that's got all the bells and whistles, it looks like, in it.
Well,
so, yeah. So,
you can usually buy, like, a box of cheap nitrile gloves for relatively cheap, and that comes usually with 100 gloves in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you grab a handful of those and throw them in, that's, you know, maybe a couple of dollars worth of gloves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, barriers for CPR are super cheap now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they got whittled them right down to the absolute minimum now, so they're not expensive. You know, throwing a couple of those in isn't hard anymore. Like I said, I mean, you can literally get away with a half-decent pocket knife and some triangular bandages and some dressings.
Dressings, yeah. And
yep. Anything to absorb the blood or fluids. You know, if you've got a couple of plastic bags, that's just good. That's good, too, because they do things like if you've got somebody got hit in the chest and you got a fucking chest wound or... Yeah,
okay.
Things like that. So
there are bandages that that stick to anything, and those are for the sucking chest wounds and that as well. Bags, they'll work in a pinch, right? Just like if you had to use a shirt or something like that too.
Exactly.
Okay.
You use what you have on hand. If you happen to have the right stuff, that's great.
Okay. I like the fact that you talked about having flares and having and having the blanket, the Mylar blanket and that as well. Shock is another thing that we tend to forget about, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything specifically that you can think of, like, for the person, like, protection for us, if we're going to be treating these people, do we need alcohol for us? You talked about the barriers.
Well, the CPR barrier is a big one, because you don't want somebody, because if you're doing CPR properly, chances are pretty good you're going to wind up with, unfortunately, vomit.
And nice.
it's an unfortunate reality. Because if you're pushing on somebody's chest, chances are pretty good you're going to pop something out of their stomach as well.
Oh, okay.
It happens. Gloves. You know, if you have any chance in the world, make sure you have them.
Okay.
If you don't know, there's all sorts of nasty bacteria out there and viruses out there that if you've got cuts on your hands and or even scrapes or anything, and you're going barehanded onto any kind of fluid, you know, urine, vomit, blood. You want protection for yourself.
Right, and let's be honest. If somebody's on the ground and maybe they've had a convulsion or something like that, they're going to have urine. You're going to have blood. You're going to have vomit. You're going to have, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
You're going to have.
It's one of those times when everything that can go wrong does.
Yep.
And you do your best to protect yourself. I mean, if you don't have it, then you have to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are you gonna get down there and help, which is gonna risk your life, or are you gonna call 911 and just do what you can without actually touching them?
Okay.
And people have had to make that decision, and it's ultimately a very private decision.
Okay, well, that kind of leads us into some other questions we had. Unconscious consent. Should you treat them? Someone's laying on the ground there. You know, you've walked up to them, like you described. You kicked them. Yeah. They don't respond. And just say they're not breathing. Should a good person start doing CPR to try and get them back, or?
That's, again, it's going to be another personal call. However, with the Good Samaritan laws we have, if you have any training at all, or if you feel like you know what needs to be done, then you're covered. I mean, if the person's not breathing and they've got no pulse, they're already dead.
Yeah.
All you can do is do your best and hope that they come back. For the most part, if they're unconscious, there's implied consent.
Okay.
As soon as they can't talk to you, who's going to say, no, I wish you hadn't left me alone?
Yeah. Okay. But if you do come up upon someone who looks like they're struggling or something like that, and they wave you off or they say no,
then all you can do is keep an eye on them and call emergency services.
Okay. Yeah.
You don't have to touch them.
Yeah.
All you have to do is go, okay, no problem. Okay, I'm calling 911. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've been in that situation as well. Somebody didn't want the help, but it was obvious that they needed help.
Exactly.
So calling 911 and asking for ambulance and police services is always a good.
Yeah.
And you talked about that as well. You said one of the first things you should do is assess the situation and call 911.
Yeah.
And then start.
Get the pros in.
Yeah. So because of the fact that if you start something, again. Like, I've had a first responder training, and, the first thing that you should be doing is calling so that you can't stop. If you're starting CPR and doing other things, you can't stop in the middle of it to actually call 911.
Not unless you have no choice in the matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There are situations now, by the book, By the first aid books and that, where getting up and walking away is actually legitimate, but it's another one of those cases of what's going to be better. But if you can't get emergency services there, and the only way you can do it is by actually leaving quickly, getting a hold of them, and then getting back, sometimes you have to make a decision there too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, an unfortunate situation to be put in.
Mm.
Yes, it is.
It's always nice.
If you don't happen to have a cell phone or something on you.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to, run up to the road and flag somebody down, or, run to the clubhouse and grab somebody because you didn't have a cell phone on. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
Yeah. That's one of the things. It's always nice to have somebody going to the range and going by yourself.
Yeah.
But if there's other people around, awesome, great. And you can give...
Yeah, enlist them.
Sorry? Yeah, enlist them.
Enlist them as best you can.
Yeah.
And the more you can, more people you can get doing things, the less likely you are to get interfered with, too.
Exactly. Like, I know that every time that we go to a competition or we go to training, who has had emergency first aid training or responder training? Who has a cell phone? Is it working? Who would like to go to the... to the road to direct emergency services in.
Yep.
Make sure that you have all that under your belt before you actually go and do any of this stuff. But I know that I've come on, I was talking to Jackie about this before,
mm-hmm.
and as I said to Jackie, I said, you're probably more likely to use your trauma kits and your first aid training coming upon a car accident. And this is one of the things that happened to us. We were coming onto a car accident when we were on our way to Stratford. Anyways, the lady that was in front of us, she left the road and went up into the trees and that. And we stopped, obviously, got out and helped her. We assessed the scene and was helping her, and some other people had stopped as well. And one of the people that had stopped, or two of the people that was stopped, one was a chiropractor. Yeah, anyways. And one was a nurse, and it was his nurse. And I was dumbfounded. They didn't... do anything, and they didn't really want to do anything, so I, being the bossy person that I am, I told her to go out and stand on the road and call 911, and I gave the other guy something else to do as well, because they didn't know what to do. So, anyways, and then a medic showed up, an army medic showed up as well, and so we had everything well in hand by the time that the ambulance and everybody got there, so anyways... Tell people what to do, so they're, one, not in the way, and two,
you get things done.
Yeah, exactly. 911's covered. You got people that are, there to direct, and also people, and if all else fails, tell somebody to go boil some water.
You don't really need the water, you don't need it to be boiled, however, you need that person gone.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So what kind of training would you recommend that people should get?
Probably at the very minimum would be something the equivalent of a standard first aid and a CPR general, so a CPR C, which is, it has the child and adult. And if you can get it, the automatic electrical defibrillator as well. Because a lot of places are carrying those now, too. So,
A lot of the ranges are. I know that Frontenac carries one, and I was looking at it today, and to make sure that they actually have their tags, that they've been checked in that as well. Just saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So what, do you know what
But people... if you can get those, then that's, for as a minimum, those are great.
Okay.
Because at least they make you completely aware of what you need to be doing as a basic.
Okay. Where would you recommend people go? Like, they take this course and they say, "Oh, that was fun. Let's go further." Where would you recommend people go from there?
I believe the Red Cross and St. John's Ambulance have somewhat more extensive training that you can get.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, you have to start looking if you're going to go for better than CPR, then you've got to look at things like Heart and Stroke Foundation has more advanced training. Some colleges have more advanced training. I'm not so much sure if you want to go into first responder training. I'm not sure who carries that actually anymore.
I can't remember who I did it with. It was a while ago. There are a few that do it. I'll try and look something up. So,
yeah, for the most part, first aid's all you're going to need in any kind of a built-up area.
Okay.
Because I mean, it's there are so many emergency responders. You know, police are all, the police are almost all first aid qualified. Firefighters, most of them are beyond first aid. You know, and then you've got the ambulance crews. So the average person really doesn't need more than a first aid training unless they're doing something like going out into the bush. And then you might want to get bush survival training and bush first aid, that kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah, just look at the Red Cross here, and it says they have a wilderness and remote first aid course, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, they also do the emergency sort of first responder. There's also ARC Rescue as well. They have one as well. So, and that's in Ontario.
Sorry, what's ARC?
ARC, A-R-C training. So they're in Ontario.
American Red Cross training.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a company.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying that was the course name.
Nope.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's, like I said, for the average person, that's all you really need is first aid. And make sure you've got some way of getting a hold of people that can do more.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So most of these places, you can assume that they have good instructors and good courses.
That's why I mentioned the Red Cross and the St. John's Ambulance. They're probably two of the best known, and they're far more regulated than some. But there's a lot of companies that use first responders as their instructors.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. you can get really good ones there too. It's just you have to sort of keep an eye on them and make sure that they, like, if you're going to get CPR training, you have to make sure that their CPR is registered as a CPR course, so that you know you're getting all the newest stuff, because that comes out as the Heart and Stroke Foundation. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you want to be pretty much guaranteed it's good information, St. John's Ambulance and Canadian Red Cross, but there are a lot of really good companies out there as well. You just have to, you know, do your due diligence and make sure you're not going into a fly-by-night company.
All right, thanks.
Okay.
No problem.
In response to getting training and all that, and also the Good Samaritan laws and all that, advice on doing things that maybe you haven't been trained for, or maybe you're thinking, like, you've watched ER and you've watched,
and every once in a while somebody tries that.
I know I can insert a chest tube. I can do this. I've seen it. Yeah. I got a pen knife I got it.
Basically, unless you're a doctor, putting anything into a person, that comes under beyond your training.
Right. You've had a lot of training, and you've been in situations where
I've had lots of training, but unless that was while I was in the military.
Yep.
Once I left the military, that training no longer covered me outside.
Right,
because
so you can't.
It's a whole different set
it.
Of circumstances.
Yeah.
That gets really dicey really quickly. You're better off just doing your straight first. That's the other thing, is if you're trained in straight first aid, then you don't have to worry about if you go to the max of that, that's great. If you go beyond, you know, putting dressings on, putting splints on, giving somebody a sling, you know, making sure they're comfortable and you got them covered so that they don't go into shock, if you go beyond that, then if something goes wrong, they can sue you.
Right.
Or their family can sue you if something goes really wrong.
Right.
You could kill them.
Right.
Yeah. You don't want to make the situation... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so easy to make a mistake in doing any of the procedures that, you know, things like ER and MASH and that shows. It's just too dangerous.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, if you're in a relatively built-up area... you know what, emergency response, you know, the ambulance or whoever, get it, somebody else with more training will be there within a relatively short
time. Or who has access to somebody with more training, even.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
But, yeah. Any kind of built-up area is going to be like that. I mean, usually they're probably within 3 to 5 minutes of you.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're really unlucky.
Yeah.
But, I mean, most people can handle the situation for, you know, 10, 15 minutes, which is probably the outside, if it's been a busy day for them.
Right.
Yeah.
So the one thing that we want to probably reiterate is, you know, if call 911.
Yep.
Right? Get them rolling. But the other thing is, you know, assess the situation. If somebody has a major arterial bleed or something like that, pressure, even if you have a tourniquet, or if somebody's missing, you know, an arm or a leg or something, but pressure, dressing, make sure that they're comfortable, put the blanket on them, start CPR if they're not breathing and their heart's not beating, and that as well. But just make sure that the you know, the cavalry is coming. They've been called.
Exactly.
Because if it does take 10 minutes, it'll take 10 minutes, but at least you know you've... Anyways.
Yeah, that 10 minutes started from the second you called.
Correct.
Yeah, not from 10 minutes down the road when you call finally.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Good.
Got any other questions since I've taken over the interview?
No, I'm good, thanks.
All right.
That's my buddy.
Yeah, I know. I've always... See, Jackie and I have known each other since we were, what, 15, 14, 13 years
15,
old?
15, yeah.
And I was always the bossy one.
I just kind of followed along.
Yeah. All right. So, Jackie, any last words of wisdom or anything?
No. All I can say is, you know, you do with what you can with what you've got. You know, it's not rocket science. It's just people being people with each other to help things going on. I don't know what else to say. It's just kind of, that's it. This sounds stupid, but...
Well, no, it doesn't, because it's amazing. Like, a lot of people, something happens and they get focused on what needs to happen, especially if you go and get the training, right? If you have the training, then you can rely on your training and it becomes almost like automatic pilot, right?
Yeah.
And you do what you need to do. And then afterwards, then you can start thinking about it and going, holy crap, man. But
exactly.
Get your training in, make sure that you have that stuff. And so you don't have to use a belt and a t-shirt.
Exactly. But,
yeah, but if you do...
Because you'll never
see
that belt or that t-shirt again.
No.
They're gone.
We won't.
You
and
really
that
want
leather jacket you used for a sling, it's gone bye-bye, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, Jackie.
Yep, thanks for
coming on. No problem. Thanks a lot.
We just want to thank Jackie again for coming on and talking to us about trauma kits and... medical training, a lot of good information there. Thank you very much. Upcoming events. Kelly, why don't you take the first one?
Well, the first one's the one that we always talk about first. It's the 6th Annual Podcasters Charity Shoot that's being held on Saturday, June 25th at the Rockville District Fish and Game Club. The event is open to everyone and it only costs $35, and you can actually enter in to win an USCOM 41 shotgun with your entry. That's the door prize. If you're traveling outside of Ontario, to make sure that you sign up soon, and that's because you're going to need to apply for the ATT if you're going to be bringing restricted firearms. You can actually sign up with us by sending us an email at newshootercanada@gmail.ca, or you can go on to the Facebook group and ask to be added, and right at the top of the Facebook group, it's the 6th Annual Podcasters Charity Shoot. page on Facebook. Right at the top is the registration. You can also go on to New Shooter Canada at the website, and it's also on there under the charity shoot tab. So, yeah. Do you want to talk about R.J. Woods and the Handgun Fundamental course, or do you want me to do that, Michael?
You can go ahead. You're doing a great job.
Okay. So on the Friday, R.J. Woods from Fire Arts Solutions Training, or FAST, he's going to be doing a Handgun Fundamental course, and there's still two spots left, so if you want to come and join us on the Friday, you're welcome to. It's $50, and the money that's that money is also going to be donated back to the charity shoot as well. We still have to pay for the range, but other than that, RJ has graciously donated that back to the charity shoot. The thing, I posted stuff on our Facebook page about all the equipment that's needed. So if you've already signed up for it, you can go on to the Facebook page and find out what you need for that day as well. And you will be having lunch provided for you, courtesy of moi.
So. Did you see the post that Sharp 97 put up?
Yes.
I guess he ordered one of the cases from Firearms, I was going to say the Firearms Institute, Firearms Outlet, and he's all pumped to come up to the RJ course, so it'd be nice.
And what's one of the things, too, I was talking to Kevin about it, and I said, ooh, I'm going to make sure that I have enough ammo. I have to go and get more. It's 200 rounds you need, so, it's not that much. So, anyways, and the other thing that he's going to be doing as well on the Saturday, RJ sells those Tango Yankee chips, and he's going to be donating 100% of the proceeds to Soldier On that day as well. So if you want to, you can purchase the chips that day, or you can go to his site. So it's Fire Arts Solutions Training, and you can go to the Tango Yankee Project chips part of the page, and you can purchase them as well. Normally he gives 20% to Soldier On, but so he's going to be selling them at the charity shoot and giving 100% of the proceeds to Soldier On. So that's it.
They look really cool.
They do. I have one, and so Kevin got one recently. Did you see that as well?
Yes, somebody gave Kevin one.
Kyle.
That's right.
Kyle gave him one, so that was really nice. Kevin sent him the 10/22 stock that he didn't really need it because he bought a Magpul stock, so he just sent one to Kyle. Anyways, so Kyle sent him a chip. It was very nice of him. Thank you, Kyle.
It was very nice of both of them.
Yeah. Okay. So that's it.
All right. Next is... Sorry?
I'll see. Go ahead.
Okay. Next is the CSSA Stick to Your Guns Dinner. Come out and meet Bob Zimmer, MP, and TV star Faith Goldley. When? Saturday, May 14, 2016. Cocktails are at 6 p.m. Dinner is at 7. It's at the Quality Hotel and Conference Center at 1011 Bloor Street East, Oshawa, Ontario. It's $69.95. For more information, visit the CSSA website.
Cool. Okay, and event three, I threw it at the last minute, so I'll put in event three. I got this one also from the CSSA website. The 2016 Don Moore Memorial Pistol Matches will be held at the Connaught D&D Range on May 20, 21st, and 22nd, the Victoria Day weekend. The event will consist of Canadian 1800, which is an NRA match. On the NRA, you can use optics. Then there's the ISSF standard pistol match, which is no optics. There's air pistol, sport pistol, center fire pistol, and free pistol. And a 9mm service pistol match, and a 1500 PPC match, a snub nose, and a slug gun match. So lots of shooting over the 3 days. Competitors can register online at www.targetscores.com. or using the PDF form, which is on the website. Paying at the range on the day of the match is perfectly fine, or at the competition, you can print out the registration and mail it in with a check. As usual, the final registration will occur in the lobby of the RCMP IFR building just past the ranges on the right side of Shirley Boulevard. The air pistol match will be indoors at Air 4, and if competitors shoot on Friday evening, they can pay for everything at the RCMP lobby.
Okay. What is slug gun?
I imagine it's shotgun slugs.
Well, that's what I was thinking too, but everything else appears to me like it's a pistol match.
Well, yeah, it's funny that they threw the 1500 as PPC and snub nose is a PPC match and slug gun. It would, the way that I got this directly off their website, so it's either shotgun or it's a service match.
Okay.
Because there is a service pistol match too, but they put slug gun. I've never heard of slug gun for PPC, but you contact the website, you can probably get more information on it.
Okay. Awesome. Okay, so the new emails. We got, hi guys. I enjoyed the last show about brass prep. I've been stepping up my game a lot lately since joining the Reloading podcast.
This is from Trevor.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I recently started deburring the flash holes and uniforming the primer pockets on all the brass used in my bolt guns. I'm also waiting on my Wilson LE Sinclair case trimmer and neck turning tool to arrive. The Sinclair trimmer is promoted as the world's most accurate trimmer. I can't wait to make match grade brass. About last week's show, I noticed a couple of things. At times, the terms primer pocket reaming and primer pocket uniforming were being used interchangeably. As you know, there are two different processes. Primer pocket reaming simply removes crimp that meant to seal the primer into the pocket, which will do nothing to increase consistency and therefore accuracy. Uniforming the primer pockets, though, is all about increasing consistency and therefore accuracy. Also, IVI brass is very much worth the effort of removing the primer pocket crimp and reloading it. It's good stuff. As for flash holes, I'm not sure they can wear out. However, primer pockets can and do when cases are overpressured by loading charges, which leads me to my next comment about how long a piece of brass will last. The same question can be asked about how long tires on cars last. It all depends on how they're used and or abused. Brass life is shortened by use and abuse and consistently filling cases to max charge. Take, for example, the 9mm brass I put through my Glock loaded for 125 power factor compared to my 9mm loads I ran through my open pistol at 174 power factor. That stuff was good for about two loadings. One final note on recommending deactivating safeties on a gun. Simply put, don't do it. You can tell shooters what you would do to your gun, but never recommend they deactivate anything on their pistols or rifles. If they do and there's an accident, they can try to hold you liable and responsible. Trevor.
Excellent letter. And he's true. He's right. Let me just address a couple of things. Flash hole primers, you shoot 30, 40 rounds through your brass, you will definitely notice the brass hole, the flash hole getting bigger. The flash hole getting bigger. Because on my tournament brass, because with the 1911, when I was shooting PPC, I wasn't shooting major factor. I was shooting baby soft loads, as light as I could get with having the gun still cycle. So I was using super light recoil spring. But I was still using a large pistol primer, and I was using that case, 25, 30 times. And I still have some of the cases. And if you go through them, you can see the flash holes actually enlarged. And I'm not surprised that any open gun is hard on your brass, and it's only lasting a few rounds. If you're loading rounds far beyond SAMI specs for that caliber, they said that the compensated STI series won't even work with factory ammo and requires you to use plus P or over plus P loads. And there's only one STI steel gun I know that is even designed to function on regular factory ammo. Everything has to be overpowered with those things. So, while the guns are designed to handle these pressures, the cases generally are not, especially using major power factor compressed loads. So that's why your brass is, that's why people are using the Starline brass, because the regular brass just won't do it. And I agree, if you're shooting precision shooting, then I would uniform the primer pockets for increased accuracy. But when we're talking about new shooters picking up range brass who aren't going to reload, who are just new to reloading and are just shooting for fun. So, but we should have a precision loading episode on, maybe get Mike from the Reloading podcast on as well too. So to talk about how to do precision loads, especially, precision rifle loads, because that's a different ballgame altogether. Uh-huh. And we weren't talking about disconnecting a safety, and I would never tell anybody to disconnect a safety on a gun. The GSG has an optional mag safety disconnect. offered by the manufacturer. When you come, it has it in the box, and it tells you right on it that it's optional whether you want to install it or not. It's not installed in the gun, and you have the choice of not installing it or installing it. It also has a thumb safety and a grip safety, so you never remove an installed safety device. But if the manufacturer gives you the option of a third useless mag disconnect as a safety, I wouldn't use it. Because when we did Jim's, a package says this is an optional mag disconnect. You can install it if you want. I can imagine there might be, say, I know California has really bizarre laws, and you might have to have a magazine disconnect in the state of California. Just like they have to have a bullet button release for their mags, I believe, in California, where in another state you might not have it. So it might be included in order for them to sell that product in a certain jurisdiction, so that's why it is there. But if it gives you the option of not installing a mag disconnect, I wouldn't install it. If it's installed already in the gun.
Okay, like, Thomas.
Yes.
You would not install it, but you would recommend anybody who has it, maybe they should read the manual and make a decision on their own. Correct?
True. Yes.
There you go.
Always read, read the manual.
I'm giving you an out, Thomas.
I know you are, dear. The manual does give you the option. I know a lot of people don't like magazine disconnects, and I've seen videos where, say, for example, the Marlin 795, people actually show you how to disconnect.
Wasn't there another safety you were talking about, a plastic one as well?
It is actually plastic. No. Well, the grip, the thumb safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one you were talking about replacing, because recommending that they replace it with something that was not plastic.
Yes.
Remember?
Because the GSG has...
The one in the holster? That's the one he is talking about.
I was referring to the magazine disconnect. What I was saying is that because the thumb safety on the GSG is plastic, it easily breaks. So if you don't have to use it,
okay,
I would recommend...
What we're going to say is you don't use it, but you're recommending everybody uses all of their safeties, and it's their decision if they don't, right?
You didn't let me finish what I was saying. If you don't have to use the thumb safety...
Thomas.
Let me finish. When you go to use it, it's very fragile, so be very, very gentle with it. Because I've seen half the people I know that have GSGs with the thumb safeties, they break them. So I would suggest getting a metal thumb safety on the GSG, if you can. Now, like Mike said, if you're putting it in a holster, you've got to use it, right? You can't holster a gun and not have the safety. On a 1911, the safety has to be on. If it's cocked and locked, you've got to put the safety on. But everybody I know that has a GSG has been hard on them and has broken the thumb safety.
So if they break the thumb safety, then they should probably get it replaced.
I would replace it anyway. A lot of people who get the GSGs, because so many things are interchangeable with 1911 parts, the grips. Most people change out the mag release, they put a bigger button on. A lot of people change out the mainspring housing, and they'll put a metal one on that's checkered. Because I think the last GSG I saw had an arch. He's mad. The cat's on his blanket again. Here, I can fix it. There. That's
awesome. So, Michael.
Yep.
Do you have anything to say about using a safety?
I would recommend that you always use it.
There you go.
And if nothing else, it's because of the habit.
Yeah.
Because I will admit, when I got my 22, it had an external safety on it, and I didn't use it. And now I don't have any other handguns that have external safeties on them, but I'm concerned that if I ever get something like a 1911, I will not turn it on because of the instinct of not having external safeties. So I think that the practice of using an external safety is just good habit to be in general. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't trust safeties.
Yeah.
I really don't. If the gun's loaded and I'm not using it, your safety is your trigger finger.
Exactly. But use the other ones too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was, when Trevor was talking about uniforming a primer pocket, what is the difference between, I understand what he's saying with removing the crimp on a primer pocket, but what is uniforming then? Like, what do you use to uniform? What did it do?
You should write to a loading podcast and ask them.
I will.
I don't know what it is. So
I'm assuming it makes the pocket uniform, so it's nice and round, so you have a nice seal every time.
Okay. I didn't know if either of you knew.
Nope.
All right. Moving on. We have no new iTunes. We'd love to hear from you. Get on there and give us a review. Facebook. We have 805 likes.
Excellent.
Sweet.
We made over the 800 hump.
Next goal is 1,000.
Yep. We're doing pretty good considering, you know what, as I said, a year ago we were just over 100, so that was awesome.
Yeah.
So thanks for sharing.
Yep. Our listeners have really been stepping
up. Thanks for liking.
Check out some of the other awesome podcasts we listen to. Action Shooting Radio, Slamfire Radio, Modern Rifleman Radio, Reloading Podcast, Armed Couples Podcast, Armed Squirrels Podcast, Firearms Cafe, Geek Gadgets and Guns.
Good.
Oh, yeah, and some Crazy Unknown Trucker on Road Gunner Podcast. We warned you about them.
Mm-hmm.
I remembered from last time how to pronounce the last word there.
Gadgets and guns.
Yes,
yeah. I've actually started listening to them just recently too.
Oh, they're hilarious.
They are.
They've got some good videos. FDR Research. They got some really good videos out too.
Yeah, I think I've already watched all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Have you guys started listening to the Safety Solutions Academy podcast as well?
Some of them.
Yeah. Yeah. He's putting out like 3 a week now.
Yes, they're very good as well.
They are.
Mm-hmm. Just thought I'd let you know. Oh, and the other one I really like right now is the Yankee Marshall Project as well, or podcast as well. So just, you guys have a listen to all those.
Oh, what's the new one we forgot? What's that? Is it the Great Canadian Northern Podcast?
Great Northern.
Yeah.
Great Northern Podcast. They only have about 3 or 4 episodes out, but they're really, really well down. They're only about 30 minutes, and the hosts have a really good rapport with each other. So check them out, too.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kelly, shout outs.
Got none.
Got none. Okay.
Comment. Oh, no, I do, actually. No, I do. I have one. I have one for 2 people, actually. I got one for Wes. Hi, Wes. I heard you're listening, so thanks. And Wes, you know who you are. Wes has, actually, at the Brockville range. He's an awesome guy, by the way. He's going to come and join us for the Handgun Fundamental course. And he's also volunteering to do some help out at the charity shoot. So big, huge shout out to Wes. Yay. And who else? Mario. Mario, I just wanted to say, awesome targets. He was shooting from 50 yards pistol. Did you see those groupings, by the way, you guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are amazing. Like, from 50 yards. Anyways, just saying. Hi, guys. All right, I'm good now.
Thomas?
My shout-out is to the Port Perry Rod and Gun Club Board of Directors, another fun banquet again. And a big thank you to Williams Arms for the constant support over the years. And, Mom, happy Mother's Day, and thank you for being a great mom shooter.
Can you say that again? Sorry.
Which part?
The happy Mother's Day, because it sounded like happy Smother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day?
Did she try to smother you?
I think she did. That explains the brain damage.
Sorry.
All right. Well,
she always encouraged me to get into shooting sports. She bought me my first guns. Whenever she comes to visit me, she wants to go to the range. So I'm glad that I have such an active and supportive mom.
There you go. Yes. Yep. Mike, what about you? You got any shout-outs?
Yeah, I was going to give a shout-out to the Smith Falls Fish and Game Club, to all the IDPA volunteers, for the people who put on the match. Thanks. And because Thomas did, happy Mother's Day, Mom. Not that she listens.
Oh, yeah, and to Sarah. Sarah listens.
Yeah.
She's going to be Mom soon.
She's going to be, but she's not yet.
Well, still.
We didn't celebrate Mother's Day. Because she's not a mum yet. So just like I don't
Father's
get
Day, then.
No, I don't get Father's Day, so that's the deal.
Well, when Father's Day comes around, I'll wish it happy to be Father's Day.
Okay.
All right. Okay. And on that note,
good night, everyone.
Keep your barrels downrange and smoking.
Yeah.
Like, you can have a cigarette.
Keep it classy.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for taking the time and listening to our show. Our audience is important to us, and we encourage our listeners to contact the show with feedback, suggestions, or questions that you may have. You can contact the guys at hosts@newshootercanada.ca, and please like our Facebook page. Thanks for listening, and have a groovy day.